Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 13, Friday the 13th, and we are one show away, maybe no shows away, from finally having regular season football. And, of course, it got started last night, Dave, with the Panthers and the Broncos. What'd you think on Friday the 13th?
Boy, I was ecstatic to have football back, and it was indeed a great game. A lot of questionable, I guess, calls, penalties, whatnot. Some things that weren't called. On top of it, a lot of talk this morning about the concussion narrative is back right now, especially due to that hit that Cam Newton took late. And it was a great game. It was a closely contested game. Two teams that look poised to once again be the cream of the crop especially when it comes to the play on a defensive side of the ball. Now both teams did give up some rushing yards in that game, but against the pass as a whole, I thought both played well, and these are two teams that I think are going to compete for a championship this year.
No doubt they're going to compete for a championship, and it is the concussion stuff, the late hit that came in when Darian Stewart got him helmet to helmet on the intentional grounding play. It's going to be the conversation leading into Week One, and it wasn't as egregious as the Case Keenum situation last year when Keenum gets hit in the head and literally can't get up and is wobbled and puts his hands on his head. And they fail to take him out of the game. Dave, who's responsible in this situation? Is it Ron Rivera? Is it the spotters that are supposed to be independent that say take him out? Is it the officials? Or should they just kind of let it go and let him continue playing at a crucial point in the game?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
I mean, wow. He was on his knees, and then he did roll over. The first thing that popped through my head is, man, it better checking for a concussion. Now, what's the right thing to do? Should the player at least have to leave the field for one play in a situation like that? There's going to be a lot of talk about this between now and the games getting on Sunday. I would expect the pregame shows to kind of be dominated with this talk. But David, I don't know about you. How do you feel about the future of NFL football, say 10 years down the line, with all this concussion stuff and all? Where is this thing headed?
Well, that it's the issue, and it starts with kids, right? It starts with parents not letting their kids play football because they see this stuff and they hear about CTE, and they're legitimately scared, and rightly so. I mean, look, I don't have to make this decision. You don't have to make this decision. But I would seriously debate letting kids play football. I didn't play it at any level that made any difference where there was that kind of contact. And, Dave, just to kind of put this in a Pittsburgh framework, is Gene Steratore was the referee in this game, who has, everybody knows the connection to Pittsburgh there. But it's also Cam takes hits. This is exactly the conversation Steeler fans have about Ben, is that Ben takes hits that they wouldn't let other quarterbacks take. And Cam certainly does as well. Do you feel like Ben and Cam, because of their size and their physical capabilities, are not protected to the same degree as some other quarterbacks in the league?
Yeah, I'm gonna take my black and gold glasses off here for a little bit, and I have pointed out several times over the years. Now, of course, I don't go through. I do watch nearly every game during the regular season at some point, whether it be during, you know, immediately after those games happen around the NFL, you know, throughout the next week, or, you know, as the season progresses, I do my best to watch all of them, but not so much on with a fine tooth comb, you know, as far as hits and protecting quarterbacks and stuff like that. But with that said, over the years, I mean, I've noticed several times where Ben has gotten knocked in the head or hand to the face or something along those lines that wasn't called. And it really makes you wonder. And look, you can even go back to the game last night. I think there was one time where there was a hand or a hit to the head with a hand by a Broncos defender on Cam Newton that I thought probably should have been called as well. So, yeah, I don't think they. I think some quarterbacks get the calls and some don't. And Tom Brady leads the list of quarterbacks that I think does generally 9 times out of 10 get a call.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a scathing article by Ian O'Connor on ESPN.com about what happened in this game, talking about the 4 hits that he counted that Cam took to the head in this game that weren't called. And of course the one at the end was the most egregious when Darian Stewart kind of launched into him. So we'll see. It's unfortunate that the season is one game old and it's marred by controversy already. And that's not, you know, obviously not what you're looking for, as Graham Gano misses a 50 yarder on the last play of the game and the Broncos get the win, which again, who knows how this is all going to play out. For the Steelers and the Broncos, but if you're a Steeler fan, obviously any interdivisional game, you're rooting for the NFC team. But the Broncos get the win.
let me ask you this real quick: are we going to soon get to a point, maybe with these hits, when a player, you know, when you have happened what happened last night with Stewart and Newton, that a player is automatically removed from the game, and the player that initiated or delivered the hit,
the contact,
the contact is also removed from the game and not allowed to return to action until the other player returns.
I don't know, it's a really tough call. You know, we talk about this in sports, you know, when you injure a player in whatever sport and you get the NHL is an obvious example. You injure a guy and you're going to get a suspension should it be as long as the guy who was injured. And I don't think they want to go that way with that. That's not kind of the intent. In terms of this, I mean, you know, guys get hit in the head and get taken out of the game on legal hits. So there are, you know, the Vince Williams hit in the preseason where he got flagged and probably shouldn't have. You know, there are hits like that where you could have a guy in that situation. So I don't think that's going to happen. It's such a gray area still that we're going to work through for years and years, I think, to get it right. It's really unfortunate, the first game of the season with these two teams, that this again is the defining topic of conversation.
Are you worried about the state of the game?
Sure. I mean, anybody who's a fan has to at least be cognizant of what's going on and the ramifications of what you see in CTE and what the medical profession tells us. So yeah, of course I am.
I
assume you are as well.
Yeah, I hope I'm dead and burned up to a nice ashy lump of ashes there, you know, before any of this happens. But I am, if I'm a younger person right now in my 20s and a big fan of you know, NFL football or football in general, I kind of wonder what the game is or if it'll be around in, let's say, 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. Steelers, let's first get the injury report from yesterday, which would be the normal Wednesday if the Steelers were playing Sunday, but with Monday night game, obviously, came out yesterday. And, Dave, 4 guys didn't – so the injury report is going to be different this year. There's no probables anymore on the weekly rating because – as Mike Tomlin said, who's on the competition committee that changed the weekly injury report, look, guys who are probable almost universally play. They wanted to streamline this thing and make it, more useful, I guess, is the right answer. Questionable is questionable, and otherwise you're most likely going to go. The 4 guys who didn't go, Cody Wallace, You had Marcus Wheaton, obviously Senquez Golson, and who am I forgetting as the fourth?
Roosevelt Nix with that back.
Right, Rosie Nix. And I would assume, Dave, my personal guess here, and that's all we're doing is guessing, is obviously Golson's out. I'm guessing Wallace and Nix do not play and do not dress. And I'll put a question mark next to Marcus Wheaton.
Yeah, I would go along with what you said there. I think maybe today might be a big day. Cody Wallace with that hyperextended knee. It's been a few weeks on that, but you know, you would obviously at this point of the week now like to hear him back working again. So it wouldn't be surprising if he's held out this week. And boy, with Roosevelt Nix in this back, you just keep your fingers crossed. And boy, if there's one player, even though he probably, would only play what 10 to 12 snaps, what a big guy to not have on the field for those plays. I mean, you go back to last year and look at the impact he had in the running game when he was on the field. It was just absolutely incredible. As far as Marcus Wheaton goes, to hear him talk, and that's really all we can go by, is some of the quotes that he's had. He says that he's likely to play or thinks he's going to play, and he did see some time there at the end of the preseason. So that's obviously optimistic there as well too. But I'm with you. I think the inactive list as we sit here on this Friday will include Golson, Cody Wallace, Roosevelt Nix, and of course Zatton Mettenberger is the easy one there. And the question is, who do you dress if Wallace is down? Who do you dress? BJ Finney?
You think it'd be Finney over Hubbard? You want a center capable guy?
Yeah, obviously, I think I would, because I mean, even though Hubbard has played some center in the past, I don't remember him getting snaps there during the preseason. While BJ Finney did, and
would you dress them both?
I would consider it, yes.
Dave, and this kind of gets into this question. And the good news, obviously, is Gilbert and Hayward practiced. They and Shamarco Thomas were listed as full participants in practice of the nine guys who were on the injury list. I was talking on my show yesterday about this. Cam Hayward and Marcus Gilbert are both very good players. I think we can safely say that Cam Hayward is viewed as a better player than Marcus Gilbert, although Gilbert took that big step forward last year, didn't make the Pro Bowl. I don't know if he'll ever make the Pro Bowl. They only take eight tackles. They never do it by position, left or right. So it's last year it was eight left tackles, and I would assume every year it's almost going to be exclusively left tackles. So I don't know if Marcus Gilbert's going to make the Pro Bowl. I'm not one of those people who says, he got screwed over last year. For a lineman, it's always takes kind of it, whether you're an offensive or defensive lineman, it always takes a year after you play really well to generally get recognition. It happened with DeCastro. It happens with most guys. You're not a running back or a quarterback or a defensive back who might make a bunch of interceptions, where you have stats you can point to and people look at it and recognize it. You're 1 year in the league and they say, okay, that guy did, Le'Veon Bell did this, we can recognize he's the best back. It takes time for word to filter, for guys to watch film, to have a better understanding of line play. I think they know Cam Hayward's a really good player. I think people are starting to see after the year he had last year that Marcus Gilbert's a good player. But believe it or not, Dave, it's kind of flipped from last year, where if you lost Cam Hayward, you didn't have anybody to step in for the Steelers and play. It was going to be LT Walton. It was going to be Cam Thomas. But this year, I feel like it's flipped. If you lose Marcus Gilbert, the Steelers' depth of tackle is, with Ryan Harris, question mark, big question mark. And you've already got Villanueva on the other side, who's not exactly an established left tackle. But now I feel like if you lose Cam Hayward for a week or two, you got Ricardo Matthews, you can do some different things with the guys on the line. Would Marcus Gilbert be a bigger loss on a game day situation than Cam Hayward?
Oh, I'd still hate to lose Cameron Hayward, man.
Well, sure, you'd hate to lose either one.
I'm going to say false. I would much rather try to get through a game without Marcus Gilbert than I would try to get through a full game without Cameron Hayward.
Really? Okay. All right. Well, we disagree on that one. And then so just the rest of the injury report. Who were the other two guys who were full that I don't have it in front of me? Shemarco, Cam, Marcus.
Let's see. You got McCullers, Hayward,
right.
Hargrave, Shemarco.
Hargrave, right. Hargrave,
Shemarco, right. Thomas, and Marcus Gilbert. Let's throw that question out to our readers to get back to us by the time the game by the time the game kicks off. You can do that. The Terrible Pirate.
Our listeners.
Our listeners. I'm sitting here reading. You know I can't multitask. our listeners can contact us, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Who would you rather go into this regular season opener without, Cameron Hayward or Marcus Gilbert? That'll be a great way to open up this season. It'll be interesting to see how many replies we get. And
it's not for the season, just for a game or two.
Right, just for a game or two to start the season. All right, look.
David DeCastro. David DeCastro.
Yeah, David DeCastro. Look, I stated all along that I thought this was going to get done. I wasn't going to get all worried until maybe Saturday if this hadn't gotten done. The writing was on the wall that this was going to get done. The Steelers just don't let great players such as David DeCastro get out the door. They find a way to get things done, and they did. It's a 5-year $50 million contract extension. It's in total 6 years. The contract runs through 2021. David DeCastro reportedly received a $16 million signing bonus as part of the deal. It sounds like he got paid $18.1 million this year. So, in other words, a $2.1 million. You know, what's probably going to be a base salary. Now, they can divide that up, you know, between roster bonus and base salary, but it's really insignificant in the grand scheme of things. So, in other words, it looks like David DeCastro's cap charge in 2016 will be $5.3 million. DeCastro was originally scheduled to have a cap charge of $8.07 million, so this should clear $2.77 million in salary cap space for this year. Early reports indicate that DeCastro will earn another $6.75 million in March of 2017 in the form of a roster bonus. That means he will earn nearly $25 million by the middle of March 2017. And according to Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, the first 3 years of DeCastro's deal should total out to $33.5 million, and I assume, and that's dangerous to do, that that's what's going to be thrown out there as the guaranteed, even though it's not really fully guaranteed. A good portion of that will be injury guarantees, I assume. So, look, I mean, the real breakdown here is average yearly value of $10 million a season. That's more than fair market value, if you ask me. I'm glad they got this done, and now, boy, they.
When you say that, you mean it's. You don't mean it's an overpay. You mean it's very fair market
value. Right, very fair market value. Very, very fair. I mean, in no way was he going to get Osa Malay money. Even though he probably tried to ask for it, him and Tom Condon, that wasn't going to happen. If you look at who was the kid the Bears just signed, Kyle Long, he looks like his deal is going to average that $10 million as well. So in total, this deal is going to total out, it seems like, at $58.07 million for the 6 years. And this is fair all the way around, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's a good deal for both sides. I mean, look, this is one where, you know, we talk about when guaranteed money is important. This is one where it's not important. The only reason it's important is if David DeCastro were to be, you know, injured, severely injured, and not able to play. Much like Antonio Brown when he signed his contract, although it wasn't clearly as evident at the time, you expected him to play the duration of his contract. Just like when Ben signed his contract, the guaranteed money, not a big deal. Ben's going to play out the contract. This is what the Steelers have been good at lately. Same with the Pouncey contract. He's going to play it out. It would really be shocking if David DeCastro didn't play out his contract 5 years after this year. So then it'd be shocking if David DeCastro was not in the league 6 years from now. Now, it's still a long time, But we know offensive line, good offensive linemen could play into their late 30s. That's not an issue. A guy like Lamar Woodley, where they were wrong, if you're an edge rusher, if you're Jarvis Jones, if you're Lamar Woodley, you sign those contracts, maybe you're not a guy who can continue to produce. But the guys who have signed extensions with the Steelers over the past couple of years, you look and you say, yeah, when Ryan Shazier, now that's a guy, it's a different position, and he's a speed guy, so maybe an injury would be more likely to impact him on a long-term deal, or Le'Veon Bell, an injury more likely to impact him. Just, DeCastro and Pouncey, sure, they can get injured and miss time, and obviously Pouncey has, but this is, you can pretty much look at this and say this is a contract that's going to get played out.
Absolutely. And now, as a result of this deal, you have Foster signed through 2018. You have Pouncey signed through 2019, the same with Gilbert. And you have DeCastro through 2021. And if should you decide that Alejandro Villanueva is the guy you want there for the next several years, he is scheduled to be an exclusive rights free agent after this year. So that means he'll easily be retained during the offseason. All you have to do is offer him a minimum contract for his years accrued to keep him in 2017. And then after 2017, he'll be a restricted free agent. So once again, easily to be retained. So this is theoretically on paper you could have this group together for through the 2018 season. And with the only probably question mark there maybe being Foster, because you're not really, really married to him, technically past 2016, even though he's under contract. Now, ideally, they're planning on him playing at least 2016, 2017, and obviously the final year, 2018, but you could see a change happen there. But this
Hawkins could be your left tackle.
True. But on the flip side, you could obviously keep Villanueva around to be the swing guy at a very low cost for two years past this season.
Absolutely, could be the case. So we've expected this. The numbers came in exactly where we thought they were going to come in, and the deal's done. Took a little longer than maybe we're used to. I don't know if they've actually announced the time of the press conference, if that's today or if that'll be – I'm guessing it'll be today. I guess it could be tomorrow. but they'll get that done and move forward. So it sets us up for game against the Skins, Dave, and let's talk a bit about it. And I think,
but before we get into that, I got an add-on to that now. Now that DeCastro's under contract, in reality, you have two candidates remaining – to potentially get either the franchise or the transition tag next year. Now,
obviously Le'Veon Bell.
Obviously Le'Veon Bell, and the other one, kind of an outlier, Jarvis Jones, who neither one of us expect. I mean, he really would have to have he'd have to have 13 sacks. He would just have to be a truly changed and dominant player for that to happen. So let's throw Jarvis Jones out of the possibility here. What do you think? What do you think's going to happen with Le'Veon Bell? Do you think that he will ultimately get the franchise tag next offseason?
Are we guessing that's $11 or $12 million? Is that the number, or is it slightly less than that?
I'll have to look back and see what Joel Corey.
let's just guess it's $11 million. And Le'Veon Bell has the type of season we expect him to have. I'll say that the Steelers don't let him walk. I'll say that for sure. Is a franchise more likely than a long-term deal?
Excuse me. Bless you. Well, I think you might have to put the tag on him
to get the deal done.
To get the deal done.
I'd say Le'Veon Bell is in a Steelers uniform next year, and he has signed a long-term deal.
I concur. I really do. And look, I know they got to get a deal done with I'm drawing a blank here. Shazier, right?
Yeah, you got to get a deal done with Shazier.
Wait. You got to deal with Antonio.
Well, you got to get his option. You got to deal his option.
Yeah, you got to pick up Shazier's option possibly.
Well, not possibly. They'll pick
right,
that up.
Okay. Right. Okay. Antonio Brown obviously going to get a new deal, or at least we think he will, assuming he stays healthy.
Yep.
And Stephon Tuitt's the other one, right?
Oh, it's going to be a big off season next year.
We both think that Le'Veon Bell's going to be in a uniform past 2016 then, right?
Yeah, we do. I do, yeah.
Yeah, I do as well. I think that's pretty much the add-on that I wanted to go there. I mean, it's going to be an interesting offseason for sure. I think they let Marcus Wheaton walk. I think they let Jarvis Jones walk and hope to get some good compensatory draft picks out of that. But that's what we're set up for now as a result of this David DeCastro deal.
Yes. Okay. And I think that's right. I think Wheaton goes. We talked about that kind of in the last show.
I remember the one other thing I wanted to add on here, and people going to say, Dave, give it up. I think Alex, I mentioned this to Alex last night, and I think he's ready for me to stop talking or chatting about it as well, too. You just picked up some more cap space with this DeCastro deal, and you already had a little bit there with your final 53 set. Is there any way Lawrence Timmons gets a deal done between now and
no.
now? Okay.
No. I'm telling you, and I don't necessarily feel good about being right about this, but I said back in May that I'm not looking – I thought they might restructure his deal, but I'm not looking to give him any new money. And now that you're at this point, eat the $15 million, clear that cap space. You are loving it because we just talked about how much money you're going to need next year. This is absolutely a great move by the Steelers. You go year to year on what you want to do with Timmons. I don't think they bring him back. I think this is his last season as a Steeler. But if you decide you want him back at $5 or $6 million, okay. Well, you can make that decision if he wants to come back, next April. But this is the best thing ever for the Steelers to have some, have $5 or $6 million clear now and not have to restructure this Timmons money. So. Yeah, the cap hit looks terrible. It looks visually, it looks terrible, and everybody's upset about it. You're not it's cash that really matters out the door. And if you can live with eating a cap hit, it's the best thing. It's the best of all worlds here. So, I think this is a great thing for the Steelers.
Would you give Timmons a 0% chance, a 0.0000 chance of getting something done with the Steelers before Monday night's game?
Yes.
I'll give it slightly higher.
Only one way to go.
I'm having a hard time pulling my black and gold. I'm a self-professed Timmons fanboy, okay? So I'm still going to hold out hope, David, that something gets done. But it's obviously not much hope that I'm clinging on there, but theoretically it could get done. But I'll admit it's unlikely.
And obviously Landry Jones, blah blah blah. We know that none of the other guys are getting done. Anything else that gets done this year that's announced will basically, I'd say, would shock me. So that this is where we are financially. The Steelers, I think, this offseason may have done their best job ever of managing the cap. They didn't have to go to Ben. And they're going to have to probably go to Ben next year. They didn't restructure Timmons. So, again, we haven't seen as many articles over the last 3 months about how the Steelers have mismanaged the cap. They all came out in April, March and April. But the national guys butchered it again, and I think the Steelers did it right.
I don't know. You got people already rumbling about the recent restructures for Mitchell and Gilbert and how fiscally irresponsible –
such little money, and again, guys are going to play their contracts out. It's just they don't understand. Well, I'm not going to whatever.
It's the sins related to having a franchise quarterback and wanting to compete year in, year out for a championship. It's that simple. And look, there's probably going to be another restructure or two next year. It's just the way the Steelers do business.
Oh, yeah. No, Ben's going to get restructured next year. But how about, speaking of franchise quarterbacks, Drew Brees. Dave, I was surprised. I mean, it just looks – why'd this take 7 months to get done? Because he's getting 20 this year and 24 next year. I think his cap hit was insane this year. But he's just getting normal money. And it's only 2 years. It's a five-year deal, but you can opt out. It's basically a two-year deal. Just seems like normal payday to me. $20 million, $24 million, no big deal.
Yeah, yeah, and I haven't really gotten – I haven't had a chance to look at the specifics of what they did with him over the last couple of days. I will here in the next few for sure. But, yeah, cleared up some cap space in the process, I believe, that they need.
All right, so let's get into the game. And as we said, you know, we had a nice conversation with our man Brian on Wednesday and tried to recap that as best we could. And Dave, just gut feel here. Do you feel the Redskins are more dangerous than you thought maybe they were a week ago? And I'm asking you because I do. I feel like when I thought about this game, when I thought about it when the schedule came out, when I thought about it over the past month or so, this was a game where I guess I didn't spend enough time thinking about the weapons the Skins have offensively. I'm not a – you know, I think Kirk Cousins is somewhere – 15 to 18 in terms of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, 15 to 20. I wouldn't – he's just on the border of on the other side of the top half for me. I really don't – you know, I'm not worried about Kirk Cousins, but I am worried about their weapons. And so I think this is a bit of a dangerous game, and the Skins scare me a little bit.
I think they are who I thought they were all along here. I mean, obviously they've got some threats at the wide receiver position. Kirk Cousins, I think, is a more than capable quarterback. There's a little bit of question marks, I think, related to whether or not Matt Jones can be that guy. And let's not forget that he's coming off of a separated shoulder during the preseason. It looks like he's going to play. But until Matt Jones, I have a bigger body of work, with Matt Jones, he doesn't. You know, in no way do I think, oh my, this is a Le'Veon Bell or you know, one of the top backs in the game. Their offensive line, outside of maybe Trent Williams at left tackle, doesn't really scare me. I am a Brandon Scherff fan, though, going back to a couple years ago when he was drafted. The wide receivers, obviously, as I mentioned, can stretch field. It doesn't sound like Josh Dotson, the rookie, if he does suit up, will play much, coming off of kind of an Achilles strain. Defensive side of the ball, look, I think this is a team that can be run on. And we talked with Brian, and unfortunately we weren't able to bring that interview to the listeners there, but I think this is a Redskins defense that can be run on. David, Ziggy Hood's going to start for them. Did you know that?
I didn't, and he said, and we didn't mention this on Wednesday, so it's worth mentioning now, that he said Ziggy Hood has been great in camp and in the preseason, rejuvenated. Now he's playing in the nose, right? I mean,
he's playing left. He's playing. Kendrick Golson's supposed to play the nose. It's going to be Hood.
Ziggy's going to play left.
Yeah,
end?
Left defensive end. And look, you won't hear me. Ziggy Hood was a great quote unquote Steeler for some things. Unfortunately, he ended up being a square peg, being trying to fit into a round hole, if you will. I've always thought that, you know, I was kind of surprised he wasn't better as kind of a one gap penetrator in you know, with the Jaguars when they signed him, and now he's kind of —
was Ziggy Hood a bust? I guess Ziggy Hood or Jarvis Jones, who had the better Steeler career?
Man, I'd have to go Ziggy, though. I mean, look, Ziggy, you know, there were times he got put pushed off the football and all. I'd still call Jarvis a bigger bust right now. Ziggy was – it's too bad that Ziggy couldn't play more of a complimentary role.
I hate using the word bust, but obviously you didn't get what you wanted out of your first-round pick with Ziggy Hood. I mean, that's clear.
Is he a bust because he didn't get a second contract and was allowed to walk? Because he played a lot of games, a lot of snaps.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you look at Jarvis, you look at Ziggy, and you say they're not DeCastro, Ryan Shazier, blah, you know, go down the list, Pouncey, you know. You get productivity out of certain guys. You expect them to be starters in year two, kind of worst case, and be guys who can dominate, and neither of those guys did that.
Right. When I hear the name Ziggy Hood, the word bust does not immediately come into my head. So, no, I don't.
No, it's a Rashard Mendenhall, and I fully believe Rashad Mendenhall was not a bust. I mean, Rashad Mendenhall had some good seasons. He'll be remembered for fumbling in the Super Bowl and being Spindenhall, but he had some really good seasons for the Steelers. Didn't translate after whatever. But I mean, he certainly wasn't a bust in my mind.
No. I don't consider him that to be that as well either. Look, I mean, sometimes you hit, you know, sometimes you draft first rounders that just don't, you know, that play more like fourth rounders. But I don't consider Hood or Mendenhall bust. But back to the point here. I think that this defensive front can be run on. And it's a shame Le'Veon Bell isn't in this game. And look, I mean, if anybody knows how to block Ziggy Hood, it's going to be Pouncey, DeCastro, and Marcus Gilbert, right? So that they should, in my opinion, be able to really clear some running lanes for D'Angelo Williams in this game. And it'll be interesting to see how the Steelers are able to attack them. I like Preston Smith at outside linebacker for them. Liked him coming out of college. I think you look on the other side. They've got definitely some pass rush capabilities there as well. But you know, I kind of question what they can do at inside linebacker. Defensively in defensive backfield for them, they got some great corners. I mean, Bashaud Breeland, Josh Norman, D'Angelo Hall, who I'm not a big fan of personally, but I mean, you have to admire his play, and David Bruton back there. So, you know, I think the question mark becomes, though, however, is their slot. And you talk about Kendall Fuller, a rookie, and Deshaun Phillips, a guy I think who only started 5 games, I think, was it? Those are the two guys that have been battling to beat a slot. And I kind of circle this all the way back to you and Eli Rogers, David. I like this matchup for Eli Rogers. And if he hits your number of, let's say, 20 snaps or more in this game, and when you consider that Josh Norman is not going to follow Antonio Brown all over the field for 60 snaps in this game. But with that said, the Redskins are going to make sure they have a couple of guys trying to bracket him in this game. I think there's going to be opportunities, several of them in this game, for a guy like Eli Rogers to make some plays.
So my 27 catches after 3 games for Eli Rogers is not outrageous.
Well, I think this, we talked about 40 catches on the season, right? For Eli Rogers as a...
No, I'm easy 50. I'm over 50.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's a distinct possibility. And you know, look, I mean, could we come out of this game with Eli Rogers 6 catches for 80 yards?
Oh, yeah. I mean, any game this year. Yeah, sure.
You know, look, the lazy narrative surrounding this game, when you look about the Steelers' offense versus the Redskins' defense, is say, oh, the matchup between Josh Norman and Antonio Brown. Look, Antonio Brown's going to get targeted in this game. I just think that's too easy to point to. I think the big matchup here is how the Steelers are able to run the football against the Redskins' defense, and I think how they're able to get the ball, spread the football around to these other guys. And I think at that point, I think you really have to point your finger at a guy like Eli Rogers. And then again, I think you have to look at which one of these guys on the outside, you know, Marcus Wheaton, Darius Heyward-Bey, Sammy Coates, can provide you a chunk ability play, you know, and provide that deep threat to kind of keep this Redskins secondary honest, if you will. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to in this game, and I give the advantage to the Steelers offense here.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think, you know, clearly both sides, the better side of the ball is offense. And we talk about this every year going into the season. What's the better side of the ball for the Steelers? And, you know, I think it was probably – you probably had to get to 2010 or 11 before it became the offensive side for the Steelers. But it has clearly been the offensive side of the ball over the past couple of years and is this year. And it's just, when is the defensive side of the ball going to catch up? And with the Skins, clearly – their talent. I mean, they've got, as you pointed out, they have some talent in the secondary, but it's the offensive side of the ball is where their weapons are. And they're look, I'm telling you, you put Ben Roethlisberger on the Skins, and you're making the Skins, you know, one of the, you know, four or five teams in the NFC for sure, because their offensive talent around him. I mean, you look at the receiving core; they don't have Antonio Brown, but certainly they have a much better at the tight end position with who they have. You could argue their complementary receivers are better than what the Steelers have. D'Angelo Williams against Matt Jones, maybe you give a slight edge to D'Angelo Williams. You would give a big edge to Le'Veon Bell. Steelers have probably the better offensive line, but I mean, obviously the quarterback position, Steelers massive advantage. Although having said that, Kirk Cousins was great the second half of last year. So, you know, the Skins offense is what scares me, Dave. And I think the biggest, most interesting, and probably most entertaining thing of this game is going to be watching what the Steelers do defensively. And it's going to be watching how they play nickel, how they play dime. And much to my surprise, Dave, I wouldn't be surprised if Artie Burns sees some time on the field. Jerry Dulac on my show yesterday said, well, you know, Justin Gilbert's not going to see any defensive snaps here this week or the first couple of weeks. He said, no. And if you heard Keith Butler yesterday, he talked about these guys like, you know, the things he said make it seem like it's very possible you could see Artie Burns and or Justin Gilbert on the field. Now, it would still surprise me, but you could, and that's going to be what fascinates me here in week 1.
I'm going to reach over and pat myself on the back here. Remember how I parsed those comments that Mike Tomlin made the other day, saying that, and I wrote about this as well too, it probably wouldn't surprise me to see William Gay play in the slot against the Skins, and thus we could possibly see Golden, let's say they decided to try Golden in the slot a little bit because he did mention his name during the press conference. You could very well see Sean Davis only getting limited snaps at safety in this game if they went dime and chose to put three safeties on the field in a dime. I'm not so sure we're going to see that much dime in this game. And when it comes to nickel, like I said, I think that you just might see Gay in the slot, and then the question becomes who is the other outs, who plays opposite Ross Cockrell. And at this point in time, you would think it might just be Artie Burns, you know. So you're right. You want to talk about a story inside of a story and how intriguing it is to after this game is over to chart this thing and look at the personnel and the type schemes that the Steelers used. This is going to be it with the secondary. How much do you, okay? Let's guess this. How many snaps will Sean Davis play in this game, and how many will be as a slot defender in either the nickel or the dime?
He'll play 75% of the snaps, so 50 and 45, 45-50, and yeah, I think he'll play safety about 10 to 15 snaps.
So you think he's going to see a lot of playing time in this game?
I do. I mean, you know, just based on how it went in the preseason, I see him out there a lot, and I don't think Artie Burns or Justin Gilbert or either of those guys are going to get Sean Davis off the field. So if they come on the field, it's going to be in complement to Sean Davis.
I try to overthink these things and parse these comments way too much, way much more than I should. But I'm gonna go under your numbers there. I think it could be as low as a guy like Sean Davis seeing 50% of the snaps on defense. And like I said, I'll just throw it out there. I'm not gonna be surprised if we see William Gay in the slot. Do you trust Sean Davis on a guy like Jordan Reed?
More than I trust Lawrence Timmons.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, it's not ideal, but if you're gonna have me pick somebody, I'll go with Sean Davis.
What if I told you that? What if I told you that I can guarantee you, keeping Timmons on the field, that Timmons would only give up two catches for 36 yards to Jordan Reed? Would you take it?
How many catches?
Two catches for 36 yards.
Oh my God! Sign me up in a heartbeat. I mean, if it's five catches for 60 yards, I'll take it.
And that's only against Timmons, though.
Okay. I was talking about totals. Two for 36
against with a Reed on Timmons matchup.
Yeah, I guess that's fine. I mean, you know, two big chunk plays down the field on first or second down.
Would you leave?
As long as neither's a touchdown.
Yeah. Would you take three catches from Reed against Timmons for 50 yards?
I mean, probably. I mean, I think more in aggregate of what he does on the game. Like I said, if he has six catches for 70 yards, that's a good day for him, and it's probably a sustainable day for the Steeler defense because I think he'll be their biggest weapon.
Of course, the counter argument to that our listeners will have as well. You can put Sean Davis out there and get and possibly get less than that.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. My guess for Jordan Reed is six catches for, you know, 60 or 70 yards.
Yeah, that's fair. And he is, he's what worries me the most. Look, I mean, you go back to the last couple of years, right? Steelers and these tight ends, don't seem to have an answer for them. And oh yeah, they got guys like DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon and Jamison Crowder who can do other things as well too. So Kirk Cousins is, look, I mean, make no bones about it. We head into this season worried. Who are you worried more about, the secondary or the pass rush? Chicken or the egg?
As you say, yes.
Yeah.
I'm as worried about the edge rushers as I am the secondary. I'm not worried about the defensive line.
Yeah, man, I just come from the school that a great pass rush makes your secondary look like all pros sometimes. And now I am concerned about a young guy in Artie Burns in being in the right spot. I'm worried about Sean Davis at the start of the season being in the right spot. I'm worried about a guy like Artie Burns not getting sucked inside, get some of those outside runs that are bounced outside and not having that edge contained and everything goes along with that. So I think it's fair to equally be concerned about the outside linebacker pass rush and the secondary in this first let's say quarter of the season here. But once this thing progresses, I hope that my fear becomes more of, man, can this pass outside linebacker pass rush pick it up some, you know? I think that's where I am. But make no mistake, I think this comes down to in this game is, can the Redskins keep up on the scoreboard with the Steelers, right?
Yes, for sure. That's what it is, and I think that'll be the kind of the outlook for the season.
How will the Steelers offense possibly disappoint you?
Well, turn it over. That's it. If they turn it over three times. I mean, look, I think you go into an NFL game and you say, we'll turn it over once every game. And if you do that, it's not ideal. Obviously, you don't ever want to turn it over. But if you're over the course of the season, you only turned it over 16 times, you'd probably be pleased with that. So if you can keep turnovers, you know, again, just I'll repeat what I say every year. If you only gave me one stat and I had to tell you the winning team, give me the turnover differential and I'll be right most of the time. So win the turnover battle. So, if they turn it over one or less times, I feel pretty good about their chances to win this game.
Give me the tot stat, which basically turnovers and explosive plays, and I can 80% of the time tell you who won that game. And then on top of it, I love that NEA stat I always like to spout. And boy, Carolina and Denver sure posted some impressive numbers in their game Thursday night there. Look, plain and simple, you know, the Redskins are probably going to try to establish the run early and obviously try to attack the Steelers, I think, with some short, quick underneath passes, try to get Jordan Reed down the seam for a chunk play and occasionally go deep over the top to a guy like DeSean Jackson here and how the Steelers, you know, the Steelers got to get that defense off the field on third downs. Captain obvious statement there. Be nice to force a turnover or two in this game and give the offense a short field. And, you know, offensively for the Steelers, you know, just what we've seen a lot of for the last, you know, a few years out of Ben Roethlisberger and this Todd Haley offense. You know, run the football, use your running back out of the backfield. You're going to get the ball to AB, obviously. And, you know, as we opened kind of with, look for a guy like Eli Rogers to be targeted maybe 5-6 times in this game.
Yeah, I'll just keep taking the over on the numbers you threw out for Eli Rogers. So, Dave, let's do a couple things here. Let's get some season numbers out for the Steelers, and then let's run through our picks for the week. So let's there's a lot of talk about Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown being league MVP, and it's legitimate talk. I mean, clearly with the Steelers' offense, these guys are leading candidates. Over under Ben Roethlisberger 30 touchdown passes.
Over.
Over under Ben Roethlisberger 4,200 yards passing, which is 262 a game.
Over.
Over under Ben Roethlisberger 12 interceptions.
Oh, over just barely.
Okay, so that's Ben. Le'Veon Bell. This is all assuming health, right? That they play a 16-game season, and Allen can knock these down for us, so we can take a look at him in January. Le'Veon Bell, and I'm with you, I'm over on all three of those as well. Le'Veon Bell, and obviously I'm picking numbers that I think are roughly where they're going to be. He's going to play 13 games for the Steelers. Yards from scrimmage, 1,600 yards.
Wow. Let's see. Over?
I'm going to put it on the number 1600.
I wasn't given that opportunity.
1601. I'll go.
Yeah, Price is right.
D'Angelo Williams yards from scrimmage 600.
Under.
Yeah, I'm going to go under as well. Jesse James receptions 35.
Yikes. Under.
I'm going to go under also. Antonio Brown. Does he break either the single season receiving yardage or receptions record?
No on both.
Yes on both for me. Touchdowns for Antonio Brown.
No, I'm not 10. Hating on him. I just think that ball.
Nobody says you're hating.
They NFL will. I'm going to get death threats for me because of this. I just.
What is it? What is it? 143? Is that Harrison's catch record? 143.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I'm going to give him 150 and 2,000 yards. So I'm going to go over on both. Over under 10 touchdowns for Antonio Brown.
Over.
I'm under on 10. I think he's going to have 7 or 8.
I get punt returns in that? Even though we're probably not going to see a lot of those anyway. But okay, I'll take the over.
Sure. Sammy Coates, 50 catches.
Under.
50 catches, 700 yards. I'll go under 50 catches and over 700 yards. Marcus Wheaton, 50 catches, 700 yards.
Oh boy, under.
I'll go over on both. Eli Rogers, 50 catches, 700 yards.
I'm warming up to the over on the catches, not the yards. I would take the under the yards and 51 catches.
I'll go over on both, but I like the way you're thinking on that one. Will any of the Steelers' other four receivers have more than 5 touchdown catches?
You're saying outside of Antonio Brown, right?
Yeah.
No.
I'll say yes. I don't know which one, but I'll say yes. That one of them will have more than five. Okay, defensive side of the ball. Who leads the Steelers in sacks?
Cameron Hayward.
I'm going to go off the board here and go Ryan Shazier with 9. Do the Steelers, they had 48 sacks last year. They were in the mid to low 30s the previous couple of years. 44 sacks, over or under?
The optimist in me wants to go over, so I'll take the over.
I'll take under. Steelers, 15 interceptions, over or under?
I got no reason to go over, David.
Yeah, I'm under on that as well. So, no, does any Steeler have more than 4 interceptions?
No, I think 4 is the number, though.
Yeah, I think 4 will lead the team as well.
I think it'll be Mike Mitchell too.
All right. Well, let's do this. Let's do our picks for the week, and we'll circle around as we're getting close to the hour mark. We'll circle around and then make our Steelers schedule season predictions after that. How's that sound? All right, so we both had Carolina last night, so we both started 0-1.
Correct, sir.
I'm gonna pull up the lines here, and you make sure that I'm working with something that's on point. We want to get us started as I pull it up.
Yeah, we got. Let's see here. Tampa Bay at Atlanta. I'm showing Falcons favored by 3 at home.
Okay, I think I'm going to be a little different than a lot of people this week. So I'm going to take I am going to take the Bucks.
I'll take Atlanta to cover that 3. Minnesota at Tennessee. Looks like the visiting Vikings by 2. Let's go with two and a half.
I actually think they upgraded here with Sam Bradford. I assume he's going to get the start and go in this game. I think Tennessee will be a little bit better. I'll root for Tennessee this year. I'll take the Vikings minus 2.5.
I'll take Tennessee at home to win this one outright and cover.
All right, the Browns go to the Eagles, and the Eagles are minus 4, and they're starting Carson Wentz.
Oh, wow. Give me Cleveland to cover. I think Philadelphia wins this. Give me Cleveland to cover.
I'll reluctantly take the Eagles in Wentz's first start, but this is great news for the Steelers that Wentz is getting a nod early. The Bengals go to the Jets. This is one of the better games of the weekend. Lots of interest in this game. What's going to happen with Fitzpatrick? Dalton, he's going to be missing Tyler Eifert, and so, you know, it'll be Tyler Boyd's first game. This will probably be, I'll get myself in front of the TV for this one, Dave. And I'm going to take the upset here. Bengals by 2.5. I'll take the Jets to win outright.
I'm with you on this one. I'm with you on this one. I definitely want the Jets plus the points here. What are you showing on this? Okay.
2.5.
Give me the Jets plus the points.
Oakland goes to New Orleans. New Orleans at home minus 1. Give me the Raiders.
Yeah, boy, I'm on board with Oakland. I think they make the playoffs this year. I really do. So I'll take Oakland to win outright.
Chargers at KC. KC minus 7. Give me the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are going to be very good again this year.
You know, something has me wanting to take San Diego in this game. Not to win it outright, but give me San Diego plus the points here.
Okay, the Bills at the Ravens. Ravens minus 3. Who you got?
Yeah. Give me the Ravens to cover this.
I'll take the Bills on the road. Bears at the Texans. Texans minus 6. I have to tell you, Dave, we spent a lot of time paying attention to the NFL and knowing what's going on and trying to understand at least peripherally what's going on with all the other 31 teams. I have no idea what the hell's going on with the Bears. I can barely tell you who's their quarterback is.
Cutler, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got to spend some couple minutes looking at their roster and figure out who they are. So I'll take the Texans because I don't know what's going on with the Bears.
I got a funny feeling Houston's going to take a step back for some reason this year. And boy, if J.J. Watt, if he can't hold up health wise, that's going to be a big concern there. I'm not feeling it. I think give me Chicago in this opener plus the points.
Interesting game, Green Bay at Jacksonville. We've talked about Jacksonville, kind of the offense took a big step forward. There are people who think Blake Bortles is a fraud. They, even though he put up numbers last year, they think the numbers are kind of hollow numbers. They were playing from behind a lot. Their defense, they signed all these guys. They got a bunch of young talent. Their first two picks in the draft, Jalen Ramsey Miles Jack from UCLA. Those guys could be, you know, premier players at their position. Green Bay is the Super Bowl favorite in Vegas going into the season here. Green Bay's -4.5. I'll take them reluctantly, Dave. I'll take Green Bay reluctantly, but I'll be rooting for the Jags this one time.
Yeah, give me Green Bay to cover here.
Miami at Seattle. Seattle -10.5. We'll see what Gase does with Tannehill. I think the Seahawks are still really good. I'll take the Seahawks.
Yeah, if this was at Miami, I might be a little bit swayed to take Miami plus the points, but I can't not take Seattle and cover here.
Giants and Cowboys, pick them. I'll take the Giants.
Yeah, I'll take the Giants as well too. I think this is the easiest money here, but you know.
I do
too. You know
too.
How that goes.
First time, I think it's first time in a year I root against the Giants every week, but I'll take them here. Detroit at Indy -3.5. This is an interesting team too. A lot of speculation about the Colts are no good, and there's obviously a lot of mixed feelings about Andrew Luck. Dave, I'll take the Lions +3.5.
I'll take the Colts to cover and cover by a bunch in this one.
Okay, and another marquee game, the Pats at Arizona, Arizona -6, Garoppolo at quarterback. Gronkowski may be banged up. Give me the Cards. Comfortably numb.
Yeah, boy. I know Belichick's going to use all this to try to rile his team up for sure, but I don't see how New England can win this game. So give me Arizona to cover.
Rams at SF. Rams -2.5. It'll be Case Keenum at quarterback. It'll be Case Keenum. How's the ad go? Case Keenum. Blaine Gabbert. Football. Monday night. you know, whatever. I can probably tell you comfortably, I'm not going to watch that game. I like Todd Gurley. I like Aaron Donald.
Yeah, give me the Rams as well too to cover this one.
All right, Dave. Week one: the Steelers and the Skins, and we will skip the podcast on Monday. We'll do it on Tuesday because we'd like to come in right after the game, so it'll be a long night for both of us. Remember, you can hear me on the post-game show with Charlie Batch across the Steeler Radio Network. That'll be about, I guess, you know, 10:15. We'll be on probably till about 1 a.m. recapping this thing, and Dave and I will be with you on Tuesday morning. We'll be doing writing throughout the night, I'm sure, to try and get a handle on what happened here. The Steelers are 3-point favorites, Dave. I'm a lot more concerned about this game than I was a month ago. And it's not because of all the Steeler injuries, et cetera. It's because the Skins' offense is probably better than I had given them credit for. But I still think the Steelers win this game, and I think they cover. I don't think they blow them out, but I'm going to give them a maybe it sounds like a blowout, but I'm going to give them 30-20.
It a little bit closer than this, David, myself. I do like the Steelers to win this one. I'm going to go 27-23 on this one. The over-under is right at 50, I believe, so this could match the over-under number, and I have the Steelers
We both put it right on 50.
And I have the Steelers covering by a point here, 27-23.
Okay, Steelers, 10.5 wins, over or under?
David, you know, I like my annual prediction is 10-6, right? I mean, for as long as we've had the podcast, I'm going to go one better than that this year. I'm going to go 11-5 this year for the Steelers.
I'll stay with you. We'll do it together. 11-5, make the playoffs, win the AFC North, and go from there. This is a Super Bowl capable team for sure. And as I said on Wednesday, one of the things that would be really interesting is this team could be a lot better in week 8 than it is in week 1. And that's what you're looking for. And that won't just be improvement of the young guys, Hargrave, Burns, Gilbert, Davis, pick whoever you want. But it'll be getting Le'Veon Bell back, getting Ladarius Green back, hopefully getting Cinquest Golson into the equation and being good to go.
All right, so, who are your final four teams?
Well, I'll pick the obvious ones, the Steelers and the Pats. I think they're head and shoulders better than anybody else in the AFC, the two best quarterbacks. And on the other side, let's go. I feel like I'm so chalk, but I'll take Green Bay and Seattle.
I have in the NFC Championship game Seahawks over Packers.
We got the same teams there.
And okay. I wrote up yesterday, I had the Steelers over the Patriots in the AFC Championship game.
We picked the same four teams,
all right. I have Steelers over the Seahawks in Super Bowl 51. The last time I picked the Steelers to win the Super Bowl, I believe, was in 2012. And how did that work out?
I'll go right with you. Steelers over the Seahawks in Super Bowl 51 in – where's
Houston.
It been played this year? Houston, all right.
I mean, no way people accuse us to be – look, I'm with you. I think as long as this offense stays healthy – I think they're going to be fine. The big question mark is about this defense, and if they can get that NEA number down to 5.5 or less, at the end of the regular season, I think they've got a legitimate chance to make the run. The question marks, as we've stated, is this secondary and is this pass rush? I'm with you. I think this defense will get incrementally better as the season goes on. It's just how much better can they get? I don't think this is going to be a lights out defense, but if, like I said, if they can get that NEA number, well, I'll be tracking that on Steelers Depot all year long, under 5.5, then I really, really do like their chances. And, you know, I don't consider this just a homer pick. I think they have a legitimate shot to win a seventh Lombardi. And hopefully I'm not as wrong as I was in 2012.
All right, fair enough. I mean, we're all on the same page here, except you hate Antonio Brown.
yeah, that's exactly right. All right, as we wrap up this Friday podcast ahead of week one, you can visualize David and I holding hands together. that's a scary thought, isn't it? Okay, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to donate for the new season, you can do so. Go to SteelersDepot.com and find that donate button in the upper right navigational bar. David, I cannot wait to do this with you again on Tuesday.
Yeah, and if you want a taste of what Brian had to say, he'll be on my show on ESPN Pittsburgh, which you can hear on the iHeart Radio app at 5:30 Eastern Time today. And the Big Kaboom, Mark Caboli, will be with me as we're back into Carson City Saloon from 6 to 7. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.